And this is the text from Matthew's Gospel on which we based our service. Now, when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them and cured their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now late. Send the crowds away so that they may go into the villages and buy some food for themselves." And Jesus said to them, "They need not go away so that they may get food. You give them something to eat." And they replied, "We have nothing here but 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, "Bring them here to me." And then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. And taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples. And the disciples gave them to the crowds. And all ate and were filled. And they took over what was left of the broken pieces, making 12 baskets full. And those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. The Gospel of the Lord. You have heard as many sermons as probably I have given about this particular passage. And it's a good passage because it illustrates what Jesus' ministry was all about. And we all understand the basic meaning of this. First of all, if you look at the miraculous part of this, he takes 2 pieces of fish and 5 loaves and feeds 5,000 people. So somehow, from the miraculous point of view, God created much more out of the abundance that was there in the basket to begin with. And so everyone ate, plus there was 12 baskets left over. A statement about God's abundance and overprotection of his people. Another way of looking at this is that Jesus says to his disciples, "Take the little bit that you have." And by their giving it out, those 2 fish and 5 loaves to the people, people had already come, as was the custom in those days, with food for themselves for the day. If you were going into the deserted place, you had, you know how they always present the Jewish people and people of that time period with big coats? Do you ever wonder why they're in the desert and they got these big coats? Because those big coats have pockets. And the pockets bring all the things that they need for the journey. There were no McDonald's somewhere across the dunes. There was nothing way out there to pick. There were deserted places. And so they brought food for the day. So what happened was the disciples took the little bit that they have and inspired everybody else to open up their coats and share what they had brought. And by the time they got through, there were 12 baskets of remnants, which tells us that basically the little bit that we think we have may go much further because of the example we set and the illustration we give of what it means to be a person who follows Jesus. Those are the 2 main points that we make about this story. And you've heard them all before. I know that's no surprise to anybody. I'd like to go back just a little bit to the beginning, because what precedes this passage, you know, it starts off and says, "Now Jesus heard this and then decided to go off by himself to a deserted place." What did he just hear? Does anybody know? See, I know because I read the book. And it's right here. What happened just before this is the story of John the Baptist comes to an end. And John the Baptist has been imprisoned because he called Herodias and the king to call them to concern because they had married each other and one of them was divorced and it was a nasty thing to do and they weren't allowed to do that. But anyway, the king had done this, and so John the Baptist says that they're living really in a state of sin from his perspective. And because of that, he's thrown into jail. And he's been sitting in jail for a while now. Now, John the Baptist, remember, is about 6 to 9 months older than Jesus. He's his cousin. You go back to the infancy stories, you see Elizabeth is pregnant. She's in her 6th month when Mary gets conceived. So there's 6 to 9 months somewhere, and he's older. But he has started a life living out in the wilderness. And living out in the wilderness basically was a theological statement suggesting that very much like a vision quest for Native Americans and people who go on journeys to find themselves and get in touch with the spiritual life, those who go into the desert are there to meet God. And they go there to live in austerity and without any distractions, to open themselves up to whatever God may be asking them or speaking to them in their lives. And John the Baptist comes out of his experience and starts the whole call of Judaism to repent, to change their lives, to do something, because whatever you're doing now isn't working. God's not happy. So John the Baptist is thrown in prison, and the king throws this great birthday party. And Salome, you all heard of Salome. Salome, the queen's daughter, does this wonderful dance. This sounds like something out of the Playboy, but anyway, she does this wonderful dance, and the king is so pleased that he promises her openly to everybody in the room that whatever she wants, he will give her. And so the mother pulls her aside and says, ask for the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And so she goes to the king and says, I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And he says, well, I'd give you anything in the kingdom that you want. I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And so immediately he dispatches the people to go to the prison and take John's head and bring it into on a platter. It's a gross story. But when Jesus hears that John the Baptist has been murdered, then he goes into the desert to be alone. What was it like the last time you lost somebody you loved? For some of us, it's very fresh. For others of us, maybe it's not so fresh. But you remember the feeling. You remember the emptiness. You remember the powerlessness. You cannot help but look at the anxiety and the anguish that had to be a part of somebody you love being taken away. You can't fix it. You can't change it. It's there. And what do you want to do? You want to go into your room and pull the covers over your head and don't see anybody in the world. That's what Jesus is feeling. And that's why when Jesus heard of this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. Why that's important is because, as what happens with so many of us who have been in that situation, people want to do something. They want to respond. They want somehow to come in and make you feel better. They want you to, you know, do good things and don't get lost in that loss and, you know, be happy for all the things that they've had and all the things that you have as memories and just get over this, get past this. The crowds don't know this. But from their selfish point of view, they want more of Jesus. And so they run around the lake and they find him in his alone space. And if you've been there, you know what it must feel like to have people invade your sacred space. You want to be nice. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But at the same time, maybe you resent it. Maybe it creates problems. Maybe you feel numb. The gospel says, when he saw the crowds, he felt compassion. Now, go back to the scene where the multiplication takes place and everybody is fed. One of the things that happens many times in our lives is we see a situation and we want to at least address it, if not fix it totally. And so a lot of things we do, we reach out beyond ourselves and make a contribution, put ourselves out there, a little bit more effort, a little bit more presence, maybe a little bit more money, a little bit more of something to make it better or to fix it. Today, in today's world, every time seems something happens, there are reasons for people to say, GoFundMe, and they make up a page so people can help. If it's to cure a disease, if it's to get special treatment, if it's to make somebody's life better, if it's to get a wheelchair for somebody that can't afford it, get medication they can't afford, or surgery, that's a part of reaching out and doing something for people. And that's called charity. Charity is going beyond perhaps our limitations and making somehow a donation of ourselves, whether it's monetary, time, or whatever. You can look at the feeding of the 5,000 as charity. People starving, people going to go hungry tonight, people alone in the wilderness, take out of what you have and you give it, and that's charity. Jesus, says the gospel, looked at them and felt compassion. The difference between charity and compassion is that compassion allows me to look at you and to identify not only with your situation, but to accept my part in that situation, to bond with you in a way that supports you, that gives you life, that nurtures you where you need nurturing, that embraces you where you need embracing, that helps you not through the whole process, but helps you through the moment. That's not charity which is given and I'm gone. That's, I hear you, I see you, I'm here with you to the end. And because of his compassion, because he identifies with those people, this little story, this little miracle thing that some can accept or object, he's teaching us something about ourselves. And it comes right on down to this table. In fact, every table that we sit at, this very same thing is happening. We have the opportunity, if I'm sitting down with Louise across the table and we're eating God knows what, nothing really good because we don't eat anything good, it's all healthy, you know. Being able to look at her and know where she is, of what her day has been like, of what's worrying her, of what's weighing heavy on her heart, of her journey, where she has been, where she has come to, and the hopes that we have together, and being there with the understanding that I'm not going anywhere. Even if we just had an outrageous fight, we do have those occasionally. They're healthy. To sit across at a table and to share food is a great invitation to compassion. And brothers and sisters, we do that here symbolically, but it's not supposed to remain here. It's supposed to extend to our lives. Otherwise, Jesus is talking to our heads and not to our being. It's a way of life. We will sit at table out there, and we have an invitation to be compassionate, not just charitable. We eat out We go places where other people are present. Every encounter with another person is an invitation to be compassionate, to look beyond the surface, to hear and see what is happening, and to be there for the long haul. I read something this week that startled me. It'll startle you too. And this is putting aside politics and all the stuff that divide us. And there's certainly arguments on both sides of every issue. But somebody talked about what Jesus really meant when he talked about being open to each other, loving one another. And this person suggested, and this won't come as a shock, but it's thoughtful, that in everything Jesus did, in everything that he said, in all the works and miracles of his life, in everything that he spoke, even to his dying breath, Jesus never asked anybody if they were Republican or Democrat, if they were black, white, green, or purple, if they were gay, if they were transgender, if they were immigrants. He never excluded anybody because they came from some place we didn't know. He never asked, "Why don't you speak my language?" He never considered a person's religious thought. He never questioned anybody's loyalties. He never once asked anything more from anybody than that they would love themselves enough to love others. If indeed we are called to imitate Jesus, and if indeed this message today about compassion is something that challenges us, it's important for us to challenge ourselves and ask ourselves, how does my understanding of faith, how does my understanding and appreciation of the world around us invite me to be like Jesus, true Christian? There are challenges. There are many, many discussions. There is no one answer. But at least we need to ask ourselves the question, who would be at our table? Who would we not want at our table? And then remember, in his darkest hour, when everything seemed lost, when part of his heart was ripped out because of his love for somebody who was taken away out of time, and through murder, he looked at the world and saw compassion. It's just a thought. Amen.